New York Real Talk with Pamela Sue Mann, Alex Lefchuk, and some incredibly inspiring guest co-presenters from the city that never sleeps via Siren Radio and Southside Broadcasting.
I'm on the floor, humbly bowing. See, I've learned what not to do. Let's keep it here, keep it.
Dance like pink flamingos do, and I will dance like me, and you will dance like you.
It's great news. Great news, because we can honestly say for the first episode of New York Real Talk, the sheriff is with us. Yeah, the sheriff is with us. I'm referring, of course, to the legendary director, Phil Leerdis, who, as we wait for Pamela Sue Mann to make her usual entree, which will be awesome, we say, Phil Leerdis, welcome to your first edition, of course, of New York Real Talk. How are you, sir?
I am... excellent. I am still perplexed as to what this show is about. Not helped at all by the invitation having the topic be my name, which nevertheless is a topic that, given very little research, I am able to discuss. So anyway, I've come out of one of the hardest, most challenging summers of my life, and that which does not kill me only makes me weaker and easier to kill.
As Nietzsche didn't say. But it's great to see you. And in terms of what New York Real Talk is all about, I will invite you to ask that question of Pamela Suman when she actually comes on board, because we do have Kathy Mansour. It is very much an American-biased program, as you might expect, with myself kind of redressing the balance, perhaps, in certain ways, much as perhaps the New York Times would actually redress the balance with its own particular views on what the world is all about, and so on and so forth. I don't know, Kathy, if you managed to have a look at that particular feature which suggested that Hackney Marshes was indeed full of marshland. And as a resident currently of Lincoln, England, you're well aware that we don't really have anything other than mutton and gruel to actually consume as far as the citizens are actually concerned. Isn't that right, Kathy?
Absolutely right. I can definitely verify. I mean, yeah, not too much of a stretch.
No, your whole description, Alex, just brought to mind images of Finley Curry, right? Wasn't the actor's name in Great Expectations, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, this is the whole thing, or indeed possibly even Mark Lester saying, please, sir, can I have some more? But I'm not here on New York Real Talk just to actually do cod Dick Van Dyke impersonations of Cockneys from years gone by. No. We're here to put the focus on our guest. And so, Kathy, I'm going to actually invite you to throw a few questions at Phil Leonis in terms of, as I said, I started off by saying, welcome to the sheriff. The sheriff is actually with us, and I appreciate the sheriff actually being there. You could always say that the female sheriff has now actually arrived now, replete with very jaunty headwear, Pamela Suman. So, Pamela, as ever, wonderful that you've actually made it to the start of your particular production, which is great. Phil was asking, what is New York Real Talk all about? So share with us.
That's a really good question. That's a very good question, Phil. Have we ever asked ourselves that, Alex? Maybe we need a little self-reflection.
One thing is consistent. Every time I am bold enough to ask that question every few months, the answer deepens my mystery.
Yeah, same here. No, it's absolutely true. Well, you know, it's interesting. We get to put on our New York hat, and not that everyone in New York is wearing this hat. Maybe they were 75 years ago, but not at the moment. And, you know, we get to be very direct, whereas, you know, in normal life, we're maybe trying to be a little more polite here and there. We just want to get to the nitty-gritty of the questions that we ask, because let's face it, everybody just wants to know, you know? You can be nice and you can be polite, and that's fine. But, you know, give us the dirt. Tell us, you know, what's really going on.
People really do want to know, unless you tell them something that conflicts with what they already knew, in which case then you're apt to have a fight. Alex, you began by using a nickname for me that I have not used in, 15 years or more, the sheriff. And
since we met, Phil, you actually stopped using the nickname pretty much after we met, I would have thought.
Yeah, and that's not a coincidence, but it's a long story that my solicitor tells me I should not share on the air. Do you like that I use solicitor, by the way, as a lawyer?
Yes, enjoyed.
But I thought, why don't I, since you brought up the nickname, and I don't know if this involves, if this falls under the bailiwick of New York Real Talk, but there's something going on in Los Angeles County right now that makes me know I will never use the nickname the sheriff ever again. And it's, we're having a sheriff election right now, but our sheriff just had investigative powers taken from him by our state attorney general because he, or pursuant to him ordering a raid on a county supervisor's house and on another civilian's house. And this is like the 10th time that the sheriff's department has conducted raids on people involved in the civilian oversight of the sheriff's department. And, you know, him taking this point of view of, don't you want to know if your civilian oversight is corrupt? Well, boy, yeah. And we would love to trust the word of the person that they are overseeing. Yeah, so it's madness. It's bonkers. And I should have known about this before, I guess, if I was an engaged citizen. But it's the woman the civilian who's the head of the oversight board is the woman who many years ago, Alex, was responsible for my certification as a violence prevention specialist in California. She runs a nonprofit called Peace Over Violence for almost a half a century now. Her whole life has been dedicated to helping those people who have survived violence and helping to build a world beyond violence, especially violence towards women, relationship violence, violence towards children. This is what she's dedicated her life to. So by all means, sheriffs, go ransack her house.
Interesting point and an interesting style. I don't know, Kathy, we'll move back to Pamela in a few seconds, but Kathy, did you have a question you wanted to put to Phil, given that I can honestly say, and quite rightly so on New York Real Talk, that it's America 4, because Jessica Burtis is obviously with us, currently in Dublin, Ireland. Kathy Manser, of course, originally from Miami, Florida, but in Lincoln, England, and Pamela Sue Mann, quite rightly, due to the title of the programme, in New York City itself. So, Kathy, your question.
I mean, first of all, we have to consider maybe because Phil brought in the LA News. So we're going to have to.
You just seem to have frozen once again, Kathy. Ironic, really, as you're based in Lincoln, but never mind. Well, let us continue. Pamela, let's cut across to your good self. In fact, I will actually sort of celebrate Phil's appearance on the show, given that you're actually currently working in terms of possibly visualizing the joys of New York Real Talk on YouTube. I'll actually sort of decide to actually pop in my film noir background and literally just fade away into a film noir-esque background. So over to you, Pamela.
Okay, I'm going to be shockingly New York because I'm wearing my hat. So it's giving me confidence. Phil Larinus, who are you?
I am your worst nightmare. I am someone with an opinion for any occasion. No, I don't. Who am I? I am someone that I would say is most defined by his, and he does go by the pronoun he, is most defined by his determination to uncover what he's made of in any situation. That is actually I would say the best definition I could offer up of me. I am rigorous in wanting to embrace whatever wants to come forward as an opportunity to deepen my connection to myself and what I made.
That is so beautiful. Is this backwards?
No.
Know thyself is what you're saying. You forget, Pamela, when you hold the magical cards up to the camera works its magic, and so we can read exactly what you've said. We don't have to look at a mirror to actually see what's being said.
I'm so glad that I resisted. You know, having done some live television, Alex, as you're aware, and live radio, but my impulse immediately is when someone's holding up something, they want me to read it. And so, of course, when I saw WTF, I'm getting ready to say that out loud. And then I think, maybe it's not a cue card. So.
But you can say that, can't you, WTF?
Yeah, but I don't. I like taking abbreviations and saying them. Full form, you know, like I still refer to it as home box office, not HBO, you know, and I will not write LOL. I will say I'm laughing out loud. So,
that's wonderful. And you know what? Something I learned from an Irishman a while back is a word which you can always say. If you take the word that begins with the F and ends with the K and you just put an E in instead of a U, then you can actually say that word and not be bleeped out. Right, Alex?
Yes, and indeed, what the flip is perfectly okay from that point of view. Curious, Jessica has actually used a more technological aspect from that perspective, which is that TIL, that HBO stands for something?
I had no clue that HBO stood for something. I never considered that those letters had any meaning beyond HBO. Yeah.
I love actually saying that when people say, like, it was on HBO, and I'll ask them, home box office? So, Pamela, A spinoff from this show that is already demanded on a daily basis. It could be like a 30-second upload to YouTube, you know, from the files of New York Real Talk. Things I learned from an Irishman. That would be an amazing daily, like 30 seconds.
Jessica, you could help me on that.
Yes, we'll have to compile. We'll compare notes.
Yeah, I always, whenever I revealed some kind of like bizarre skill that I might have developed along the way, and anyone would ever ask me, like, how'd you learn how to do that? I would always say an old Vietnamese sailor taught me.
Well, now we need to know like a skill, like one of these skills.
I don't know, like the ability to smell 3 seconds into the future, you know, things like that.
Ooh, have you ever heard of useless superpowers?
You, oh, like of course.
75% levitation, that kind of thing.
But yeah. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it's actually good. No, no, really, in all seriousness, because there is always a point at the show where I have to take the reins and tell everyone, okay, stop kidding here. Now let's get serious. I do want to know, everybody wants to know, what has led you down this really unique unicorn-shaped path that you've been heading down in your life? And I mean, what was the first thing? What was the first thing that grabbed you and you thought in your little self, I am passionate about this, I want to follow this? What was the first thing you fell in love with?
I don't know if this will be the first thing. I've always loved storytelling. I read voraciously as a little boy. I have a collection of short stories I wrote when I was 4 years old. The best of which was Star Trek and the Mystery of the Metal Men. Seriously, better than Star Trek V. But I was not a voracious television or movie viewer. I was a reader. And I loved ideas, and I loved very early on being able to place myself in the experiences of other people, of trying to walk in their shoes, of trying to empathize. And at the same time, I was always fascinated by dreams as a little boy. I would write down dreams that I had. And so the first time, I guess the die is cast in terms of me pursuing a life in the visual arts was, and I think Alex has had to hear this story before, but the first movie I ever went to see was a Disney film called Gus, about a football, American football playing mule. And don't kid yourself, it's the Citizen Kane of sports played by animals movies. But I spent most of the movie with my back to the screen, which honestly is how I would recommend watching that movie. But I was fascinated not by this movie, but by the reactions of the audience and how, you know, the images would go across their faces and they would react and light up, you know, and so I was fascinated watching the people. I've always been a people watcher. And then from that point of view of this little boy staring back over the back of my chair at the audience, I noticed the little room up top where this light was coming from. And of course, that was the projection booth, and there was a little man up there. And I became fascinated by that. But then I noticed something, which was this projector, which was projecting the light, had a shutter. And so the light wasn't constant. In fact, 2/3 of the time, it was closed. So only 1/3 of the time was an image being projected. And so like the little kid that I was, who would also try to catch the refrigerator door, try to see if the light really went off when I closed it, you know, try to be fast enough, I kept turning back around to the screen to see, well, that means 2/3 of the time, there's no image up on this screen. Because 2/3 of the time, nothing's being projected. But there was always an image on the screen. So how is that possible? And of course, this is something called persistence of vision. Truly, on the old days of film projection, if you watched a 90-minute movie, there were only images on that screen for 30 minutes of the time. 60 minutes of the time, it was a blank screen, but our brains filled in that gap. And as a boy, the first thing that occurred to me is, this is just like dreams. And so from that point forward, I've been kind of obsessed, I must say, with the parallels of cinematic language and dream language, and exploring the mythological underpinnings of our existence through those two different languages.
So beautifully put. Wait a minute. How old were you, please?
So Gus, I mean, we could look this up. I'm going to guess seven. I'm going to guess I was 7 years old.
I don't know about anyone else here, but when I was seven, I think I was combing my dolly's hair and cutting it. And then I realized that it wouldn't grow back. And it made me very sad.
So you were conducting, another way of looking at this, Pamela, is you were conducting scientific experiments.
Yes, absolutely.
I feel like you both sound like very observant seven-year-olds. Like, I was trying to catch fairies when I was seven, and you guys are like very observant thinking about things.
No, I was just destroying.
But you know,
no, I mean, I was cutting my doll's hair, gonna grow, and my mom didn't think I did though. So,
but you know, I think this is, and Alex might have some real profound thoughts on this, but I've always thought that this is the challenge with measuring the development of little humans that we will call children, by measuring their development as fitting into timelines. I'm sure there are certain things in terms of motor skills that development pattern really matters and we want to be aware of for what it might mean from a health basis. But in terms of our development of our own unique psyches emerging and starting to guide the ship, I'm struck. You know, I appreciate what you're saying about how, wow, I'm so young when this happens. And when I was that age, this is what I was doing. But I have the same experiences. I made a movie called Carl Rove, I Love You, a fictional documentary. And part of what I had to do was really immerse myself in studies of Carl Rove's life and upbringing when we went and filmed in all his towns where he grew up, because he moved around a lot as a child. And for people who don't know, this was the senior advisor to President Bush, the second, the younger Bush, and had been called the most evil political figure of our time, back before we knew what evil political figures were. But one of the things that I uncovered about this man was when he was in high school, he had written down that his dream was to cement a conservative majority in this country for generations and generations to come. This is when he's in high school, he's writing this down. And I have this moment of thinking exactly as you were saying, when I was in high school, all I could think of was how to get time with the girl across the aisle from me. Like that totally was, and he's plotting out how the next half century of American life is going to go. So I think we all have these moments where we learn about each other's development and we go, wow, what was I doing at that point? What's wrong with me? And I think that's the beauty of it, right? Because I increasingly, as I walk through this world, I tend to think of us all as performers, that acting and stage work is a metaphor for life. And we're all this giant ensemble. And the challenge of this ensemble is how do we take what is uniquely beautiful and valuable from each of us and build something with it? And so we all, every one of us, have these remarkable stories of moments that might just blow the minds of everyone else. How could this happen to you at that age? But it's
absolutely. And I also feel like it's interesting when you're looking at young people and you're thinking how they're seeing their now or their, you know, their future. And when we look back, you know, after you, I don't even want to put an age on it, but perhaps like 35 or something, that's young. But when you look back and you think, how did I get to where I am? Because, you know, when it's a little child, like when I grow up, I want to be a lawyer. I want to be a doctor. I want to be, you know, an evil warlord or whatever you decide when you're little. But the thing is, you look back and you see the path that you've taken. And it's what's that book, The Crooked Timber of Humanity? It's a little bit different. But I mean, in the sense that we can't predict the roads we'll take and the things that we'll become interested in throughout our entire lifetimes. And that's what's fascinating, is only by looking back, you can sort of begin to connect the dots, but you can't really unless you have a superpower that allows you to do this, you can't see what's going to happen in the future. You can't predict the things that are going to twist and turn. And I find, I mean, one of the things on New York Real Talk I find really, really exciting is to talk to these incredible, unique individuals and find out, like, where, like, what was the first little spark? And then from there, because so many people that Alex and I speak to on New York Real Talk, and of course, Jessica and Kathy as well, is it's so interesting because their lives are not this, you know, it's not like they were locked in a room with a violin when they were four. And that's what they did. And that was the trajectory, only violin. There have been a few people, you know, not that they were locked in the room, but a few people that, you know, that kept that singular trajectory. But it's fascinating to me how human beings kind of twist and turn, and they're like quilts of things, and how their lives go. So it is fascinating to me about you, because you are a bit of an enigma. And even if I know more about what you've done, I still go, who is Phil Ammons?
You know, there was something that someone said of me, and this is decades ago, and I think it's even more true now, that I have always attempted to be very forthcoming. I don't have a lot of time for secrecy. You know, I feel like secrecy, I understand people feel the need to keep secrets and things, but my experience is that secrets erode us because they take such energy to hold. And I do believe in keeping things sacred, that if there's something you told me that, you know, in confidence, I would hold that to be sacred. And what makes something sacred is a sacrifice. I would sacrifice any need or desire to gossip about it, for example. But secrets I find erode and destroy. And so I've spent more and more and more of my life trying to open more and more. But what was said about me decades ago, as I said, I think is even more true now. I'm very forthcoming about myself, but the way I speak, it does tend to make me more enigmatic, not less enigmatic. And it's not by design. I mean, you know, I guess it's because I become more aware of the mystery of all this, and that mysteries are, that we find ourselves in no small part by exploring mysteries, but mysteries are mysteries because they are insoluble. They aren't problems, they're mysteries. And that as you explore them, you uncover more layers to them, more levels to them. And I don't know if that made any sense. I'm starting to feel, to grow tiresome of hearing myself talk.
Well, it's brought us neatly, Phil, to our musical feature. I know you're a big Paul Weller fan. Is there a particular Paul Weller track you'd like us to feature on this New York Real Talk?
You know what, whatever you have that's newest in your collection there, because I think that's what he would want me to choose, whatever's... because Paul Weller is a big influence on me, even though I'm not a musician by any stretch of the imagination, but how he goes about his work has always been very inspiring to me, namely that whatever he's been working on at the moment is the most important thing to him that he's ever done.
The tipping of scales and the balance of time proceeded. Clocks and silent homes admit it. Lights ascending, clash with planes. station, we lost it. And in the midnight bars of annihilation, we lost it. The truth is that there wasn't his to lose. Spend all your life just to find out.
Track there. I could have actually asked you, Phil, of course, what's your favorite Pamela Sue Mann number, but clearly you would have said, well, Pink Flamingos. It's the hit of the year. Clearly it would be the classic on that basis, but you know, we'll come back to that again. Kathy, hopefully you're sorting out her internet issues and he's back with us now. I'm not sure, Kathy, whether we can actually get back to that question that we were trying to achieve from you earlier, or whether you've frozen in space-time in the United Kingdom once again. It's probably all the gruel, as the New York Times would actually have us say, that we're consuming on a regular basis.
Well, I mean, really, it's the University of Lincoln. That's where I am. That's where my Wi-Fi is coming from. So we can definitely, I'm currently in newsroom one, so you would think things would be a little bit more efficient. But yes, my question originally was, and I had great commentary and I even cracked a joke, but now I can't even deliver it the same. So I'm just going to ask, what'd you do this summer, Phil? Because you just told me it was kind of a big deal and I want to know.
Oh, my parents both died within the last few years, and my sister who lived with them spent a major part of a couple years in hospital. She's my older sister. My parents left no will, no estate, no trust, nothing. So it's been a little bit of a minefield of dealing with an older sibling who is very sick and paranoid along with it, and knowing that I needed to kind of step in if there's any kind of future for her, and get named the administrator of the estate and get her power of attorney. And then pretty much it's just been my wife and I trying to clean out what I think my wife calculated as being 250 years worth of stuff that my parents, who were elderly, and my sister had collected. And yeah, empty that house, get it ready to go on the market. And so that's all been very, very tough in a town very far away from Los Angeles where we know no one. And then to cap it all off at the very tail end of this, when we could see the finish line, after years of being so cautious, both of us getting COVID. So it's not been fun, but again, getting back to my answer at the beginning, it's helped me find out what I'm made of. So, you know, it's
the reason you haven't been able to keep up with your weekly appearances on the Midweek Drive Live, obviously.
Yeah, not knowing even where I'm going to be, let alone how I'm going to be. Yeah, it has been. It has been tough. Like somebody, even who was upset with me because the thing they needed hasn't gotten done, you know, asked me, well, how is that any kind of way at all to take care of business? And I always am fond of that, right? It's like, there's still people in this world who think that business is job one. Right. I forgot that,
Pamela, let's turn to your good self, of course. And I'm not really sure in terms of Phil's appreciation for the Big Apple, but it is time for that wacky New York moment question. Pamela.
Yeah, I think I'm going to just try and say it with as few words as possible. Has there been a time when you've been in New York and experienced something beyond the bizarre? And maybe you thought this could only happen in New York, or maybe you weren't even thinking that. Maybe you were too busy with your mouth open going, I can't believe this is happening. But it could be someone you saw, it could be something you witnessed, it could be something that was happening to you or something you were taking part in. I mean, of course we have our limits with the, you know, what your answer can safely be. We'll just say that.
Well, to be fair, we've gone from Jessica's airport experiences to people seeing John Lennon levitate and David Bowie with platters of propiterol. So we've had a fair range in that.
This is true, but I am really curious to see a New York moment that stuck out for you, Phil Larness. I'm really curious about what it would be.
So I'm not sure I believe in angels. I'm not sure I give it that much thought, but I do believe in guardian angels when we travel. I do believe such a thing exists. And there is something about, God bless us, it's the thing that gives me the most hope maybe about humanity. There's something about recognizing in other people who are traveling sheer vulnerability that tends to bring out the best in us. Or can bring out the best in us. And I've had so many stories of travel guardian angels saving me. One time in London, I needed to get to Goldsmiths College to show a film, and I had no way to make sense out of what bus I was supposed to take from the station I was at to get there, and I was down on time. And I just finally knocked on a bus driver's door. He had just finished his pickup. And I said, "Do you have any idea what bus I would take to get there?" And he said, "You're an American." And I said, "Yeah, I'm from California." He goes, "I've always wanted to have a Californian on my bus." And he waves me on, and he ignores his entire route to take me directly to the front gate of Goldsmiths. It's a full bus. And they all applaud me afterwards. And like, they got me, like they were all a part of getting me where I needed to go in this. So that's not New York, but New York, I have a story like this. I was in the process of going blind, white blind. I had undiagnosed cataracts that had gone undiagnosed for 13 years on the back of my eyeballs. And it culminated in ultimately me seeing like a cat, where I was white blind all the time. But in the middle of the night, in darkness, I could see clearly. And so in New York, winter, it's snowing. I can't see anything. I'm kind of unwilling to let on how bad this has become, which makes it really fun to be my wife, who was my fiance at the time. Because, you know, men are so good when they get lost about asking for directions. So anyway, we get into it outside. I've flown into JFK. I used to spend half my time in Manhattan. I'd flown into JFK so many times. Somehow from the SkyTram, I get us on the wrong subway. We're way out in the boroughs in the wrong place. So we need to kind of reconfigure and get to Barclays Center. And anyway, we're starting to bicker and fight about this out on the snow. And this gentleman comes by, walks past us, walks up the steps, and then comes all the way back down the steps and asks us, "Where are you going?" And we tell him where we're going. And he says, "Follow me." And he says, "You're having trouble seeing, aren't you?" And I said, "Yeah." And so he kind of helps me up all the way, gets us on the train. We have to switch from one train to another train to a bus. He gets on all of these with us until we get where we're going. But what makes it uniquely New York is at no point, and he made this very clear, at no point does he have any interest in speaking with us whatsoever. Like, we're thinking this guy is taking this trip with us. We should ask him about himself. But he's got other things to do. He's a New Yorker. He's very generous in terms of helping you, but please don't get in his way of what he needs to get done. And I thought, this is great. This is a New York guardian angel. He's saving me, and he has no time for light pleasantries or politeness. Let's cut through all that crap and get done what each of us needs to get done.
So the gig was up then. Then, you know, you were outed in your vision situation.
He cut straight through. He cut straight through to the truth of it, got done what needed to get done. And this is what I'm always struck by as the character of LA versus New York. People always say about how you know, nice or how friendly people in LA are, because they're always smiling. Yeah, we're smiling in the way that you only can when you know the whole universe revolves around you. But in New York, what you'll find is, you know, yeah, everybody's in such a hurry. Everyone's in such a rush. Everyone's got so much to do. They've got so much they have to deal with. We're all isolated and bubbled in our little cars. But in New York, everyone's on top of each other. But if you get out of a subway and you pause for a minute trying to figure out your bearing, within seconds, you'll have a half dozen people ask, without breaking stride, do you need directions? Like, people will call out an offer for help, but they're not going to slow down while doing it.
You're absolutely right. It's kind of like a family thing. I was just thinking, it's almost like they take you into their home, proverbially speaking. Like, if you need something, if you are in need, you know, to a degree, you know, I think if you've partied way too hard and you're incoherent and you're wobbling around, people might not be so, you know, apt to help you, but you never know. Not that I've tested this theory out. I don't think I'll have to get back to you on that one. But I think that New York does that. People in New York do that. And my friend and I were talking not long ago about how it's really remarkable that it's just a given. And you end up having these moments of conversation where it's like, wow, you're suddenly in this intimate space with someone talking about something, or they're helping you through something where you're feeling really vulnerable, and then they go away, you never see them again, maybe.
It opens up so many aspects, Pamela, and with yourself in New York, with Jessica, of course, representing North Carolina, currently in Dublin, and Kathy Vance, obviously Miami, currently in Lincoln, and Phil Leerdes, of course, in Los Angeles. It has an extraordinary connection. We haven't, of course, mentioned that Phil Leerdes is indeed one of the voices that we hear at the start of every New York Real Talk, introducing the program and welcoming the idents to the whole system, which is great from that point of view. But Pamela, it's brought us round to the last 2 hours. We haven't even had a chance to talk about Kathy's recent return from Ukraine, where she's been helping deliver foods to various other folk as part of her postgraduate work. So it's all there. Pamela, over to you.
Well, can we take a second and talk about that?
Yes, a second. Kathy, what have you been doing in the Ukraine?
So what I was doing was I was following a group from Lincoln called Support for Ukraine Lincolnshire, and they worked with Scotland Supports Ukraine as a team to go and deliver medical supplies, blankets, sleeping bags, food, cat food, dog food, everything you can possibly imagine to Poland. And then from Poland, we meet another group called Dzwoń Ukraine, which means come on, Ukraine. And they pretty much go into Ukraine to different points to distribute all this aid. And then I joined them on that part of the journey all the way up to Kyiv before I had to turn back and, you know, write this dissertation.
We were all concerned for you. And thank goodness you're...
Guardian angels, Pamela. Last two questions for Phil in your unique way. Nothing like the old midweek drive questions, Phil. This is the New York approach. Off you go, Pamela.
Phil, have you had a good time? Will you come back soon, please?
Yes, if you will have me. I mean, the things that we learned, I don't know which, let's face it, I don't know which is more exciting. The Ukraine adventure, which I want to hear more of, or finding out that HBO actually stands for something. But... let's call them equal in terms of value.
No, absolutely. You know, you just inspired something. First of all, it was a song by, I can't remember who, Alex, you might be able to, or I don't know, maybe Phil, but I think Alex, you know that song, We've Only Just Begun. Was that Paul Anka? I don't know, someone.
Yes.
Someone ready? Yeah. Oh, okay. Anyway, that came to mind. That song came to my heart when you said that. So that leads me to say that I think it'd be a great idea if we had this group back for part two, and then we can just kibbutz. We could just shoot the, you know, stuff.
Shoot the proverbial breeze is what you're saying, Pamela. That's the important thing. Okay.
I think that'd be awesome. I think that'd be awesome, especially because, as Alex said, I'm from Los Angeles, but it must be said that I'm coming at you today from the nation's capital. I'm here in Washington, D.C. So there letting me get back in my digs. Oh my goodness! I might even be able to share one of those short stories from when I was four.
It will happen, Pamela. The final wrap up, of course. New York is home of what?
New York is home of the world's finest pickle.
It's harder. we've only just begun to live. White lace and promises, a kiss for luck and we're on our way.
We've only begun.
Before the rising sun, we start out walking and learn to run.
And yes, we've just begun.
Sharing horizons that are new to us. Watching the signs along the way.
Where there's room to grow.
And yes, we've just begun.